Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning to you and team.
Hello, Arthur. Good morning.
My name's Pete, and I've got Matt and Kimber here as well.
Hi there.
Hi there.
Arthur, I'll do a brief introduction, and then we'll get stuck into the chat.
All right, then. You go ahead.
Lovely. Arthur Leggett is a 102-year-old Second World War veteran, and his autobiography is called Don't Cry For Me. It's available online, and it's in stores now. And Arthur has been lovely enough to join us on the phone this morning. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you too, my friend.
Arthur, 102 years old, how many years does it feel like to you?
Oh, well, I'm very fortunate. I seem to be enjoying very good health. Therefore, I'm still enjoying being alive and getting out and mixing and being involved in community activities and so on. And life is going along quite good.
Oh,
super.
How wonderful. Arthur, your book is called Don't Cry For Me. Why did you call it that?
Well, to start with, you mentioned my age. And I've had a pretty good sort of a life. Not, I know we all think of the old soldiers in the war, but I packed quite a lot into my life after the war. And I've got a good family. I've got relatives. Life is just a piece of cake. And therefore, when I do fall off the perch, well, don't cry for me. I've had a fair crack of the whip.
Good innings, I hear you. Yes, yes.
Arthur, at 102 years old, given the history with war that you come from, do the memories dull over time, or considering what those memories are of being amongst war and, in your case, actually being captured as a POW, are they as vivid as they are?
Well, they are to me because every year I seem to be reciting them over the radio.
Sorry.
And I don't mind that because I think the younger generation should know and learn firsthand just some of the episodes that did happen, because it isn't a vague sort of date in history. It's a reality, and they should be made aware of it.
Well, Arthur, considering you've just mentioned the younger generation, this was going to be one of my other questions, but at the age of 35, I consider myself that generation who kind of have to have a bit of an elbow, you know, in terms of, hey, it's Anzac weekend this weekend, we're honouring the Anzacs, get amongst it, be a part of it. You, having been through what you've been through and being such an integral part of what we now, you know, have as a tradition, how do you feel about it staying relevant amongst young people, and what do you think is the best way to make it stay relevant amongst young people?
Well, I do my best. I'm very fortunate. I'm associated with one of the senior high schools in WA. And I give the Anzac Day address there, and I have done it for around 20 years now. And I try to pass on to the school children the privileges which they have, and then point out how they get them is because of the sacrifices that have been made in the past to keep this country the great country that it is. And as far as Anzac Day, well, I think it's sacrosanct. You shouldn't muck around with that, because there's so many young men of Australia who lay down their lives to have an Anzac Day, and we've got to maintain it.
Arthur, it's incredible that you are such a positive man with such a positive outlook. We know that you spent 4 years as a prisoner of Germany, and I'm of the understanding too, you know, you obviously would have seen some horrible things in that time, and I've read about the time when you left the camp and that you couldn't walk and that it was your friends who carried you out. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, yes, it's not quite the way you just implied. We had been locked up in one of those trains for 6 days and six nights, and without any sanitation or any other facilities. And we went downhill, of course, and I honestly thought I was going to die during that train journey. Mm. When we got to the main camp at Moosburg, which was about 30 kilometres out of Munich, and were told to get out of the carriage. Well, I thought I'd just sit on the floor and jump down. Well, I hit the ground and I couldn't stand up. And I remember looking up at a snarling dog with a snarling German behind it. And anyway, a couple of my mates picked me up and put an arm around their shoulders, and we three of us walked into the camp that way.
Arthur, of course, the stories of Gallipoli and of the Kokoda Trail and what happened in Southeast Asia, a lot of people are aware of those stories, but we don't talk a lot about the European theatre of war. And I come from Polish stock, and I see that you were there in the northern Polish areas in the coal mines, and then having to make an extraordinary journey across the Alps into Bavaria. We know a lot about the tropical hardships of places like New Guinea, but the bitter cold of northern Europe must have been something to endure as well.
Yes, well, the Russians put on their big drive at the end of 1944, and we were in the road of that, and we were just up and marched 800 kilometres right across Europe.
God.
In the worst winter in about 50 years, and that was rather an horrendous experience, and in as much that food was scarce, and you just plodded along one foot after the other, day after day, and snow everywhere, snow not just on the ground, it was metres thick everywhere.
God.
And the roadway, well, gradually it sticks to your boots, and the heat of your boots melt the snow, and it saturates your boot and your sock, and at the end of the day, you take your boot off and pour the water out of it. The next morning, you belt your sock and your boot around to make them a little bit subtle to get on the march again.
God.
And it was, and of course, you lived in the same clothes for 3 months. You never changed. You never had a washer. And I know I pushed a few cows out of the road to get at the carrots that they were eating. So. Things like that. Yeah, it was a bit rugged.
Anyways.
And I guess once you survive something like that, Arthur, did the rest of your life seem like a bonus? Do you know, so many of us live in fear of death or of the future, but when you've survived something like that, does fear fall away for the rest of your life?
Yes, you realise you can never be as bad as you were at that moment. I know. Well, I live on my own, and you can become depressed if you don't watch yourself. So when I start to get down, I think, now come on, you've been in worse situations than this. And so I get out of the armchair where I'm sitting and do something.
Too right.
And so, you know, right now we talk about, Arthur, so many conversations now about mental health, and you've experienced those hardships and that horror firsthand. How did you overcome those mental struggles? Are you just from a more stoic breed?
Well, actually, the poor, unfortunate people who didn't handle it are in the minority. I'm not trying to put them down, not by any means, but... with all due respect to you good people, you have to be careful of what the media implies.
Yes.
And at the moment, they give you the impression that every ex-serviceman's running around thinking of committing suicide. But I got over it from the day I was liberated. I got over it because I just left it behind me.
Mm.
But unfortunately, there are people who just can't do that. They take it deep inside them we know the outcome.
Yeah.
Arthur, I can only imagine what the moment must have been like when you were told, guys, it's over, we're going to go home. But can you remember quite vividly what it was like to land back on Australian turf and see your family again for the first time?
Oh, yes. Yes, that was quite an experience. Of course, we come home by ship and we're taken to a depot. And there was a family waiting there for me. I remember quite distinctly going up to my mum and saying, well, here I am, Mum, I told you I'd be back one day. It just took a little bit of time, that was all.
Wow, how extraordinary.
Wow. Oh, Arthur, can I ask you, what's the key to living this long? And I mean, you know, we having such bright, bubbly conversation, and, you know, how did you keep your brain active? What can we do to be like this at 102?
Well, one thing which I think helped. I'm a member of the Bush Poets and Yarn Spinners Association, and we recite poetry, we write poetry, and that makes you think and remember.
Yep.
If you're going to do it right. You have also maintained a happy attitude towards life, irrespective of all the rotten things that you know are going on. You can't control them. You're not responsible for it. Therefore, you live your life in as happy a way as you can. And as I said earlier, I'm very fortunate with a wonderful family, and they all help you get along quite well.
Hear, hear.
Mm.
Arthur Leggett, we appreciate your time this morning, mate, and with such honesty as well. Your messages are such a wonderful way to view and look at life. So thank you so much for opening up to us. The autobiography is Don't Cry For Me. It's available online and it's in stores now. All the best to you, mate.
Good. Thanks very much for your good wishes, and I appreciate your attitude as well.
Thank you, Arthur.
Good on you, Arthur. Take care.
Right, cheers for now.
Bye-bye.
See you.
Happy 50th, Hungry Jack's. Classic.
Hungry Jack's. I mean, since 1971. Now,
was that 50 years ago?
It was.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. About as long as I've been on the planet. And I know perhaps for some younger people, it seems weird to kind of reflect on a fast food outlet, but it was a different time. There weren't a lot of places to go.
We only had Hungry Jack's and Chinese
That's
restaurants.
It. That was it.
That was all there was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Hungry Jack's for me was a huge part of, you know, there are certain rites of passage as you get older, when you're first maybe allowed to walk to school or ride to school by yourself, when you get your license and whatnot. And Hungry Jack's for me was very much a part of that. On a Friday at Cannington High School, we'd go to Cannington Rollaways and skate between 6:30 and 8:30. And then we'd all toddle off through the dark car park of Carousel to Hungry Jack's and eat and, you know, spend our pocket money and kind of feel grown up because we were there on our own. And, I mean, I hate to say it, but we used to smoke. You could smoke cigarettes inside the restaurant using the straws, which were somehow perfect size for cigarettes as cigarette holders. And that's not important. What's important was that it was a huge part of my growing up, of my independence.
Yeah, I understand that. I mean, we had my family were very healthy. We never had any treats or food in the house. It was very rare. But on the days when Dad played cricket on a Saturday and we had to go and watch his boring game for 6 hours in the day, we got rewarded by getting Hungry Jack's for dinner.
Hello.
And we were all allowed a Whopper because it had salad in it. and that was we looked forward to that. That was a thing for us.
It was a treat.
When I think of Hungry Jack's now, I think of Dad's cricket.
Yeah.
That was the connection.
Yeah.
Well, for us, being a little bit younger than you guys, Macca's has always been around.
Mm.
But when we were younger, and we lived in Queen's Park, grew up in Queen's Park, so the Cannington Hungry Jack's was our go-to as well. But Hungry Jack's was always the stop on the way home from a trip down south.
Yes.
And I remember being in the car and saying to Dad, oh, Macca's, and he'd be like, that's not a real burger, son. The Whopper. We're going to get a Whopper. And sure enough, you know, we'd go through that one. It was that, and it was also Saturday morning sport. I remember you'd get a certificate, and the certificate would be sponsored by HJ's, and you'd be able to go over to HJ's and get yourself a little, you know, burger or something like that.
Yeah. And, of course, one of the burgers that seems today to not really make any sense. Because you can get ham and cheese toasties pretty much. Well, you can get them at 7-Elevens. You can get them at Servos.
Mm.
The Yumbo.
Yeah.
Which is, they're putting it today, you can get them again for $3 in Hungry Jack's stores as part of this celebration of 50 years.
So it's not meat with ham and cheese. It's just
Ham and cheese. And back in the day, it was basically ham and cheese in a polystyrene container that had been microwaved within an inch of its life.
Why didn't they call that a Hambo?
Oh, that's a great question.
That's a great question. You've totally ruined 50 years of reflections. Let's go, 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 go and get a yeah, yeah, yum, yum, oh. With cheese. Yeah, yeah, yum,
yum, oh. With ham. Yeah, yeah, yum, yum, oh. Yes, please. When you want something delicious and different and absolutely scrumbo, get down to Hungry Jack's and get a yumbo.
Oh.
Two slices of melted cheese and 5 hot slices of ham on a sesame seed bun. Yes, please. Let's go, 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 go and get a yum.
What do we work for them or something? What's going on?
That's awesome. Mate, I'd forgotten that one.
Slices of ham. God, you don't get that in Toasties these days.
You certainly don't.
That's a lot of ham.
We want to know your Hungry Jack's memories, because we grew up with them.
Mm-hmm.
Tanya in Byford.
How you going, guys?
Good, mate. Talk us through it.
All right. Well, we used to travel from Karratha. Karratha never back in the day had any takeaway.
Uh-huh.
And we used to get in the troopy with the folks, and we'd come into Perth via the Great Eastern Highway. First stop, Belmont Hungry Jack's, or on the Great Eastern Highway there in Belmont.
Yeah.
All pile out, big massive feeds. We thought it was great. You know, you get a burger and a drink. And then, you know, when we're leaving Perth to go back to Karratha, you know, back in there and buy up some burgers and take them home back to Karratha with us. And through the years, Karratha still didn't have Hungry Jack's. So if you flew in and flew out, you had to bring back burgers for everybody.
Wow.
That's brilliant.
That's how popular it was.
I know. It just occurred to me. I had my sixth birthday there. Remember when you used to go and you'd have your birthday and they'd give you those crowns?
The cardboard crowns.
Oh,
my God, the crowns.
I remember having the one at Melville in the little train car. I don't know if it's still there, but anyway. Danny and Clarkson, g'day.
Oh, hi, guys.
Danny, what are your Hungry Jack's memories?
Oh, well, because there was a lot of kids in my family, my mum made us go through the post and we'd get all the little clippings for the discount vouchers.
Yeah.
And we'd collect them up and we'd check the date. And if they'd cover people's birthdays, we'd go there for a birthday celebration.
Brilliant.
Just speaking of birthdays, you just reminded me. I remember they used to send you, because you could become part of like a club or something, they used to send you like a free meal on your birthday. And you'd get the mail in the post that day.
Oh, it's like getting a telegram from the Queen when you turn 100.
You know, I don't think we ever went there without a clipping, without one of those vouchers.
Yes.
You know, like I think that was standard. You had to.
Let's Pam. Go. Oh, yeah, go for it.
G'day, Pam in Hilbert. What's your Hungry Jack's memory, mate?
I've got too many to count. I'm a Hungry Jack's girl, born and bred. So Dad was probably one of the very first Hungry Jack's managers here in Perth. And he unfortunately broke his back in 1984. But Hungry Jack's, I can't, you know, Jack Cowan and the crew at Hungry Jack's just supported Dad and Mum like through it all. So fast forward a few years later, both my big brothers worked for Hungry Jack's. One of my older brothers was, the handyman that went around to all the different HJ stores doing the gardens and all the maintenance and stuff.
Yep.
Dad often talks about Danny Green as a young boy going out the back and beating up boxes at one of the stores that he worked at as well. So, but I guess the kicker for me was being a 14-year-old girl, being somewhat rocking into Hungry Jack's in Gosnells, being somewhat of a celebrity because everybody remembered my dad and my big brothers.
Yeah.
And then from probably the time I was 15 to when I finished when I was 18, my now husband used to ride through on his pushy through the drive-thru because I was the drive-thru girl every weekend just to hang out with me. Oh. And he even took up a job to sell the papers, the Sunday papers that used to get through the drive-thru. He used to stand out there just to keep me company.
Oh, that's romantic.
Far out, Pam.
What
a life of. That's incredible, mate. Thanks for your call this morning.
Not a drama. Have a great day, guys.
Gee whiz.
It's like weaved through her entire life.
Yeah.
The Gossie Hungry Jack's was the one we would stop through on our way up to Serpentine Dam on a Sunday.
Yeah,
classic.
Oh, got a killer bacon deluxe right now. Pete,
Matt and Kimber. You guys, I did it. I found my people.
Your tribe.
My tribe. Oh. I really did. And they say that, you know, you really find yourself when you find your tribe.
Who are these people?
These people are fellow collectors of toys.
Uh-huh.
And I found them at a place called Nexus Toy Fair, which I didn't know had been around for close to 20-odd years, believe it or not.
Oh, really?
It happens 4 times a year, and I've been meaning to get there for quite some time. And this one was at the Leisure Life Centre in East Victoria Park over the weekend. And it was just me and my youngest daughter, Izzy, and I had her perched on my hip.
Yeah.
And I had the backpack with all of her stuff in it, and we wandered in, and I tell you what, as soon as I walked in there and saw what was laden with the tables and everything in front of me, I was like,
Liz, come and get Izzy.
100%. But I walked in there, and to my right-hand side, there was Star Wars memorabilia.
Yeah.
As far as the eye could see, there was boxes of Kenner-labeled toys that was still in their blister packaging.
Ooh.
It was incredible. There were Chewbacca's. There were Luke Skywalker's. There were Darth Vader's.
The only
it
thing that you
amazing.
Love more than a toy is a toy that's never come out of its box.
Yes.
That's a very good point. And there were toys that were never coming out of their box as far as the eye could see, mind you, as I was saying. Now, the Star Wars stuff was amazing. I'm a mad Transformers fan. The vintage Transformers that were around were just, it was purely something to behold. It really was. And there was a couple of mates of mine that I bumped into while I was there. And this is where I was like, oh, yeah, this is definitely my spot to be. Because one of them's wandered out. He calls himself Blue Streak, which is a Transformer. He's a paramedic. Ripper bloke. And he's wandered out. And he's holding a little snap-lock bag.
Yep.
And he's gone, mate, I found it. And I was like, what do you mean you found it? He goes, I found a vintage G1 Grimlock. And I knew exactly what he was talking about. Nobody else knows what he's talking about.
Idea.
But I knew exactly what he was talking about. How much did you pay for it? $75. Oh, you little beauty. That's amazing. And then we wandered around a little bit more and we stopped at a table. And out of the corner of my eye, I saw something that I haven't seen in years.
Go on.
If you smell what the Rock is cooking.
And I bought it, you guys.
Something wrestling.
It is a 1999 vintage corporate Rock doll. As you said, Kimber, still in its blister packaging from Jack's Pacific Toys. $40. And this thing was there staring me right in the face with the corporate eyebrow up in his sort of forehead. And I was like, this thing is coming home with me.
Explain corporate to me. What is the corporate element?
Okay, so The Rock. I'm glad you asked, Matt. Yeah. No,
I'm not.
Kimber, stay with me. Stay with me. The Rock.
As in, what's his full name again?
Dwayne Johnson.
Dwayne Johnson, yeah.
Back in the Attitude Era when it was the WWF, the WWE.
Of course.
He turned heel for a bit, which means he went from hero to villain. And he joined Vince McMahon and the corporation.
Oh.
And I still remember the day that I was sitting in my mate's living room in Beckenham. Watching A Roar Is War when he turned around with a chair and slapped, I think it was Shane McMahon, across the head and became the hero that we know now as the People's Champion. But this is history.
See, Pete, I don't want to bring you down, but these don't sound like your people because these people are selling the things that you find so precious.
Yeah.
Well, so they have no regard or care for the things you love at all.
No, they do. They care.
They care.
They do care.
He's got another, the bloke who sold it's got another corporate at home in its blister packaging. Wow. 10 weeks without a ciggy. That is incredible. Certainly for me. And as you know, I haven't spoken much about it because I've been embarrassed that so many times I've tried to give up and have failed. And, you know, I think about it and I'm ashamed to say this. We're talking about on, off, mostly on like a 35-year toxic relationship, literally, with cigarettes.
It's all behind you now.
It's
all behind me now.
That's the thing.
But of course, you know, for those who do smoke and those of you who have smoked, you know, it is a truly, it is a deep and horrible relationship. You love and hate it with, you know, equal measures. Mm. And there is a kind of a grieving process because you wonder, well, it's so much a part of who I thought I was.
Yeah.
You know. And
that's how you hear of people, I guess, where they say, oh, I've quit. And then I just thought, oh, I can have one more.
Yeah.
And then you realise, well, no, you can't.
No,
you're
can't.
Back in.
You can't. So in some ways, I feel like an 18-year-old that's just had it going through his first heartbreak.
Yeah.
Which sort of, you know, reminded me of a song that we've heard quite a lot lately.
I was only just a teen. I breathed you in internally. Thought I was so cool, big man around school. Now it's time to let you go before my teeth brown anymore. Must live without you. Smoking, you're no good. Wish I was joking about how long I've been toking. My lungs are choking from all the ciggy breaks that I've taken. I'm not mistaken, my bank account's been breaking. I feel forsaken, I'm shaking, chowing down on nicotine bait. So there you go, oh, I won't live long if I smoke. Oh, will I be a boring bloke? Man, I'm low, I think I got the Winfield blues. Without a ciggy in my hand, will I remember who I am? Smoking is no good, but you know I'll miss you. I'm sure I'll find some other things, but will it be blowing smoke rings? I know it must end. Goodbye, my old friend. Oh, 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 must live without you. Smoking, you know, good. Oh, 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 is that a rollie? Can I have a puff, please?
Well done, mate. Well done.
You wouldn't have got through that song if you were still a smoker.
No, I you know what? I have really noticed my lung capacity has improved for in doing these songs.
Nice one.
Yeah.